A sincere expression of gratitude to our esteemed patrons. Lynn from Massachusetts, Heather from New Jersey, Chelsea from Utah, Kate from Massachusetts, Margie from Connecticut, Courtney from Massachusetts, Amber from Idaho, and Stephanie from Massachusetts for their generous monthly contributions. Their support fuels the engine of our investigative endeavors here at Wicked Wanderings.
You too can become a valued patron and unlock a realm of exclusive content by supporting our mission for as little as $3 a month. Your contribution sustains our commitment to delivering high-quality content.
Visit wickedwanderingspodcast.com and click on the support tab to join the ranks of our dedicated patrons. Your investment not only keeps our podcast thriving, but also ensures that you are at the forefront of our intriguing discoveries with bonus content only available for those patron subscribers.
Thank you for considering this opportunity to deepen your engagement with Wicked Wanderings. Your support is paramount in enabling us to continue our journey into the realms of mystery and true crime. And now, back to the shit show.
Do you see the head on my beer right now?
Yeah. That's a big head you got there, Rob. I mean.
Which head are you talking about?
I've only seen two, and the one's on his beer.
Oh, I've seen two. I was like, wait, what happened without
his
me?
His head on his shoulders, Anna.
Oh, head, shoulders, knees and toes, knees and toes.
Okay. Hello, wanderers. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Jess.
And this is Wicked Wanderings. Hello, Jessica.
Hello, Hannah.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Are we ready to finish talking about this douche canoe, Father Levine?
We are. I've been waiting because I don't know. I mean, I know what happened because obviously you told us last episode, but
I think this case really resonates with a lot of local people, so I want to finish it and have a good discussion about it.
Yeah.
This is the second part of the Danny Crota murder. If you have not heard part one, go back. Trigger warnings, we talk about abuse in every form on this episode. Talk can get graphic, and while we show the utmost respect for the victims and their families, we need to tell the details so people remain vigilant and understanding of how difficult a time this was for the community.
Mm-hmm.
Where we last left off, Levine had been arrested on charges. We are now getting into where Bishop Weldon is knowingly allowing abusers to go free and not be brought to justice. Yeah, exactly. By this time, people were coming out with the abuse that was happening in the church. Even with this happening, Dan's parents were getting inundated with calls and messages stating that how dare they blame a priest for what happened to their son.
Oh, are you serious?
Yep.
So victim blaming.
Yep. Like
victim shame. Oh.
People. Go ahead.
Those are people that think they're going to heaven, but they're going straight to hell. Yeah, just saying. Right.
People were still believing in the innocence and godly path these men were given. Not everyone believed that Levine was guilty. Levine's supporters wanted to raise money for his lawyers, so they held tag sales, car washes, and even bake sales to raise the money. They said that a priest's salary was not enough to be able to combat all the harsh things he had to go through.
Yeah, while he's diddling little kids.
Mm-hmm. Levine started wearing large hats or hoods and wigs with fake beards in order to hide who he was. One of his victims who had not come forward yet, he said to them, quote, "You'll probably make a mistake and say something to really get me in trouble," end quote.
I'm glad you quoted that.
You're welcome.
But that's horrible. Ugh.
There was a petition signed in April of 1992 urging the court to give Levine five separate trials rather than a combined proceeding.
Good.
They did not think that a jury could honestly separate all of the given charges, which I agree with. So on April 30th, the charges were separated into five different trials to be held away from Shelburne Falls to avoid pre-trial publicity issues.
So this one was based off of that Shelburne Falls.
Correct.
One, not for Donnie.
Not for Danny.
Danny.
When the court date arrived, Levine changed his plea to guilty. The judge was going to be the one to decide Levine's fate. Oh God, you're going to get so mad. The original deal with prosecutors was 6 months in jail, an 18-month sentence, like, overall, where he did the 6 months in jail and then 12 months suspended. But the judge decided to go against that agreement because why would we punish a man for such a small crime?
A small crime?
Yep. When he did so much good for the church. The judge decided on two concurrent 10-year probation terms. He would send Levine to a church-affiliated facility for 7 to 10 months, no unsupervised contact with children under 16, and can no longer be a parish priest and pay a victim witness fee of $50. So basically, he got a slap on the wrist.
And basically, like, they're going to keep watch on him so he's not around 16-year-old kids.
Basically.
That's such bullshit.
Which, it's great that he has, he needs to have supervised visits, but, yeah. What? Like,
are they going to be supervised?
Why does he even need to see children at all?
Agreed.
The judge said he did not order jail time because he did not view the crimes as serious.
What the fuck? Of course they're serious. And he'd get killed and raped in prison. That's how serious they are because other criminals don't like it.
Right. And the diocese footed Levine's legal bill of $250,000.
Of course they did.
While at the facility that was basically a bougie getaway for church employees, Levine did not stop talking to his victims. He wrote letters asking if he was missed and made tons of phone calls to old parishioners. More and more victims were coming forward, and not just Levine's victims. It was happening all across the country, but there was more victim blame than throwing shame at the church.
Of course there was.
Ugh. Which just breaks my heart.
Getting very, worked up about
this. Girl, me too.
Such bullshit.
Do you remember those abuse files that the church kept in the secret archives?
Yes.
They were ordered to be destroyed. So when victims' lawyers went to go through them, there was no mention of abuse between 1970 and 1986. Excuse me.
So can I just say that I don't think this is what God and Jesus Christ had in mind for their young altar boys?
God, no.
And
absolutely
I don't think that not is a Christ-like thing to do, to burn the evidence.
No.
Just saying, Catholic Church.
And I feel like this is going in a different way, but I also don't think God wanted clergy to not have love in their life. So I don't agree with the Catholic Church saying that they can't marry.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't agree with the Catholic Church saying that you can't be gay. Mm-hmm. That's is where I do agree with the Episcopal Church. It's like, you could be a woman, you can be a man, you can be married to the same sex, or have a family, because this was just an opportunity for pedophiles. They had cushy jobs, they had full-on access to children.
Oh yeah,
it's like waiting for something awful to happen.
Yeah, it's like the perfect storm of loneliness and availability.
After this small cleanup, the person put in charge of the archives had just returned from a sex treatment clinic. What the fuck. Levine was released from his vacation spot on January 27, 1993.
Can I tell you what pisses me off about this?
You can absolutely tell us off.
Is that, you know, it would be one thing, and this goes with all religions that try to hide things to save face. If they had just come out and said, you know what? We fucked up. We put this guy in front, in front of a lot of kids, and he did some bad things. So we're going to kick him out.
Yeah.
Because that's unacceptable.
Right.
And we fucked up. Do you, more respect if they did that. It's the sneaky bullshit that just pisses me off. That, let's cover this up and he can continue to molest kids.
Right. And we had kind of talked about this case that happened in Texas that we could do an episode on. But in a bishop's letter in Texas that said to the sheriff's department, hey, cover this murder up that was done by a priest, because an election where a Catholic president can come into office, aka Kennedy, you can kind of see just the horror of what they were trying to do, because they knew if it came out, it might swerve the election one way or another.
When you know it is ran by man, not God.
Yeah, exactly.
In my opinion.
Because the God I believe in
doesn't give a shit about Kennedy. I mean, I'm sure he gave a shit because he loves all his children.
Right, but the election and
the
all
election,
this. Come on. Victims kept coming forward, but no charges were sticking. In January of 1994, the diocese confirmed settlement payments to 17 victims of between $1,300,000 to $1,400,000.
Because, that makes everything okay.
Parishioners were getting pissed that this is where money was going. Even with the restrictions put on Levine by the judge, it doesn't mean Levine followed them. He still tried weaseling his way into friends' parishes to try to, quote, help with things like listening to children's confessions. One pastor had a problem with this, and he told the diocese, but he was ignored. So he called the police and got a no trespass order on Levine.
Good.
Because he did this, he was punished by the diocese for bringing in the police and not keeping it in-house. The diocese had developed quite a relationship with their lawyers and so followed a certain pattern to help push off victims. And this is where I'm going to read from Death of an Altar Boy by E.J. Fleming.
Are you quoting?
And I quote. During their half-century relationship with the Egan Law Firm, the diocese developed and obeyed a well-defined playbook of strategies for dealing with allegations. As described by writer Robert M. Kelly, the strategies were, one, to maintain position. We're broke, we're special, and it's someone else's fault. Two, to avoid decisions. Make decisions by not making decisions. Stall. Litigate. Number three, to avoid responsibility. Hide power, create layers to diffuse accountability. And four, to withhold information, never admit guilt, never give up defenses, and maintain secrecy.
I'm pretty sure there's nothing in the Ten Commandments that is along those lines.
Yeah, right?
Just saying. I mean, there's that shall not kill.
There is that, yeah.
So, I mean, right there.
The Springfield Diocese was just hoping this all went away on its own. Victim after victim was coming forward, and they are hoping that it just goes away and the statute of limitations plays in. They say whatever they need to say to calm the people to not lose their money train.
Of course.
This is what
a business.
Right, exactly. This is what I meant in the beginning of part one of this episode, that this isn't about faith anymore. This is about man-made ways to control people.
Mm-hmm.
Blind faith in a system that is broken and corrupt and literally decaying from the inside out.
You know, I received revelation, or I don't know what Catholics do. Like, God said that we need to put all this money to Levine's defense because he is a victim here.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck that.
Stop. Levine is still a priest at this time, which boggles my mind. Originally, Levine would not register as a sex offender. But finally, after some time, he did register with Chicopee PD as a level 3 offender. But Chicopee PD did not post neighborhood notifications, even though it was state law required. They claimed it was unnecessary because of all the publicity he had received. Like, what?
So how many Irish Catholic people were in the Chicopee police force?
Exactly. The parish that's in East Lamelle, Massachusetts, there was a nun who was an assistant to the priest named Mary. Rob actually knows who this woman is, and she actually was a great blessing in Rob's life.
Aww.
One day, Sister Mary noticed a crumpled up fax found in the trash, and she noticed it was from an old parishioner who was upset that not more priests spoke out against Levine and his crimes. Mary knew that the current priest was going to retire, so she kept the letter in her desk for the next incoming priest. She gave it to the next priest, Father Scahill.
I thought you were going to say it was Levine.
No. And she convinced him to meet with the old parishioner to try to see if he could get him to come back to church. The old parishioner told the priest that he should withhold the percent of weekly collections that go out to the diocese until the bishop stopped supporting Levine, because Levine was still getting a salary. When Scahill, the priest of St. Michael's in East Longmeadow, brought this up to the parish on a Sunday, he got a standing ovation, and everyone was on board.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Scahill brought this up to the bishop, which caused the bishop to be angry, obviously. Even with threats, Scahill went through with it and withheld the 6% that was meant for the diocese.
Nice.
This went viral, as it could back in the day.
Yeah.
And on the front of newspapers, from the Wall Street Journal to the London newspaper.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yay, there's some good people out there still.
Unfortunately, like, Scahill still met with resistance because he ran into the bishop at a gathering of priests in Ogunquit, Maine, and the bishop scolded Scahill in front of everyone for being disobedient, disloyal, and costing the diocese money. And Scahill responded, quote, "I am not disobedient. There is no virtue to obedience that requires the surrender of virtue. There is no virtue to obedience that requires one to go myopically blind like the soldiers of Hitler."
Wow, Scahill's a Superman.
Yep.
That's Scahill, awesome.
Scahill demanded a meeting with the bishop and mentions the contradiction between the bishop saying that Scahill was costing the diocese money when he was okay paying millions to Levine's victims.
Of course. Rob, you had a comment?
So yeah, that was my priest growing up at St. Michael's in East Long Meadow. And Scahill was amazing. He was a really good priest.
Well, it sounds like it. He stood up for what he believed in, and he didn't cower under.
I never even realized that.
That he was a part of this?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's crazy. Small world, but still.
Yeah. Cause
does that make you respect him more?
Hannah reading this book, she takes a picture and says it to me one day, and it says Sister Mary. She's like, I think this is your Sister Mary. And I read what she had read. I said, yeah, that sounds like that's her.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had told me all about Scahill and Sister Mary and what they did and everything. So,
oh, that's cool.
I was like, yeah, that sounds like them.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm glad somebody stood up.
I got a funny thing about Scahill. I think it was when I was in college. Catholic priests, they can't marry.
Yeah. Right?
So what do they got to do with their free time?
Mm-hmm.
So he would like to go to local bar down the street, mm-hmm. and, you know, have a few beverages. Well,
good for him.
One night he was driving back to the rectory and got pulled over by the police and got a DUI.
Oh, shit. Good for him. I mean, not the DUI, but because we don't condone that here at Wicked Wanderings.
And
but
it was a huge scandal within East Long Meadow. But you know what? He never liked to
diddle young boys.
Yes, exactly. Diddle mm-hmm. young boys. You know, he just liked to have a couple beverages at the local pub. So
and maybe next time he could walk.
Scahill was a great guy. My sister, she was a altar girl. I guess that's what you call them. She was a altar. I don't even know what person? You call them. Altar person.
I don't know.
I grew up Baptist. You grew up Mormon. We don't know anything.
She was an altar girl when she was younger growing up. And yeah, Scahill was, he was great. And Sister Mary, she was great until she retired.
She came through for us. She was a sweet woman.
Even after her retirement.
Mm-hmm. I don't mind priests being human. Okay, you got a DUI. Like, dude, all right, we all make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference between making a mistake and being fucking gross.
Yeah, and continuously doing it no matter where you go.
Right. And not having any type of
moral compass.
Yeah, but any repercussions for your actions.
Yeah. I hope he's burning in hell.
I'm sure God had some plans for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm quoting again from E.J. Fleming's book. A month later, on November 12th, Dupree further seethed when Scahill was among six priests honored by the Survivors Network of Those Abused by a Priest, also known as SNAP. Scahill called out the church and its bishops. He said, "It is regrettable that you should have to establish an award to give to a priest for integrity." Oh my God, yeah. I totally agree with. "Integrity is something that should be expected from us. Yet inexplicably, the vast majority of clergy has been silent. In their complicit silence, they have betrayed truth and turned their backs on children and minors. By and large, the clerics have been myopic company puppets instead of being men." On November 20th, the Vatican informed Dupree it was defrocking Levine. Dupree ignored the dispatch. So it wasn't until 30 years later that Levine was finally going to be defrocked. 30 fucking years.
That's kind of a funny term for me. Defrocked.
Defrocked.
He was defrocked.
It was then found out that the bishop had his own victims.
I mean, doesn't surprise me, but what?
A reporter from the Republican tried getting to the bottom of it, and Dupree heard from one of his victims, and surprisingly, the next morning announced he was considering early retirement due to his health.
Okay, so no wonder he was trying to hide it all, because he was guilty himself.
How convenient.
Fuck that guy.
Also, this man decided to make a fund for accused priests. Yeah. The bishop was also a supporter of banning gay marriage, which, boo. When one of the bishop's victims saw this and himself being a gay man, decided to travel back to Massachusetts and met with Father Scahill, because he's like, all right, he's a supporter, who was being a great supporter of victims. Two men met with Father Scahill to go over the abuse that happened with the bishop. I will not go into detail, but he would scare the boys with pictures of men dying of AIDS so that they would only save intercourse for him. Yeah. So,
ew.
Again, I'm quoting. Dupree was quick with God excuses. He said, our relationship was a logical expression of love, and God teaches love. He said, adding, I'm God, you're sleeping with God.
What?
Yep. Yep.
So I wonder how he's enjoying hell and not being God.
Yep. Finally, with Dupree gone and hiding, the new bishop took Levine off the payroll, and Scahill finally paid his dues to the church.
Good.
There was a whole chapter on how Levine abused these kids, and while, again, I'm not going to go through it all because it is too much, and I think for a podcast, I will quote one thing that Levine was said to have told a child. When this victim told Levine about the pain, Levine said, Jesus suffered on the cross, and so you could suffer a little.
Are you serious? That's so fucked up. To compare the pain. Oh.
This guy's a dick, dude.
Yeah. All of them.
Like, I thought this book was really well done, but
Christ suffered on the cross. Yeah, and he did that for everyone's sins. So he did that for you.
Yeah.
And you're fucking it up right now. So fuck you, Levine.
Yeah. Fuck you, Levine. The author brings up the point that it may not just have been Levine that caused Dan's death. It was shown that whoever did the blow to Dan's face, it was done by a person who is left-handed, and Levine is left-handed. But based off of Danny's history of fighting, they speculated that someone he may have trusted was behind him and helped Levine because he was a good fighter. The author talks about rings of men that would pass around these young victims.
That's what you were saying last episode.
Yeah, and they were men from the church and places like the Boy Scout leaders. There was a group of men called the Holy 13.
And they're not so holy?
Definitely not. The book by E.J. Fleming does get into the abusers and the victims. He mentions what happened to the abusers if they died and if and when they retired. For the victims, the stories are mostly tragic and sad. They turned to drugs, alcohol, violence, and some committed suicide.
Well, how can you not? Because here you are experiencing this extreme trauma from people who are supposed to be men of God, who are supposed to lead you to God.
Yep.
And even they are hurting you. So who are you supposed to go to?
They were safe spaces.
Yeah.
Even with the Boy Scouts in there, like, that was a safe space you're supposed to put your child.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't.
Sending them to the slaughter.
And let's be honest, with even therapy now is such taboo still.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine, you know, 50 years ago.
Yeah. You didn't talk about that shit.
Right. These individuals' lives were ruined. They were children that were forced to endure unimaginable crimes by the people that were supposed to keep them safe. They not only had to deal with the abuse, but they also dealt with the cover-ups and being called liars, which just...
And being blamed.
Yeah. Levine was looked at for other murders in the area of Western Mass, but nothing stuck. There were still old lady parishioners taking him to lunch three or four times a week. He still painted, and one of his pieces for years hung in Mercy Hospital in Springfield, which just boggled my mind. The Croteau family, along with so many others, were destroyed because of pain, sadness, and these disgusting crimes. So to end this, I'm going to read from a Mass Live article from 2021, so very recent. Defrocked Catholic priest Richard R. Levine died last week as police were poised to seek an arrest warrant charging him in the 1972 slaying of altar boy Daniel, or Danny Croteau. Hamden District Attorney Anthony D. Gulini said Monday, citing no evidence that included hours of recent interviews with Levine and a forensic linguist's review of a letter seen as a key piece of evidence in the case, Gulini said the investigation into Croteau's death is now officially closed. The district attorney gave the green light Friday to state police detectives to present the case to a magistrate. They were prepared to then prosecute Richard Levine and prove his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, Gulini said. But Levine, 80, died that day. Gulini said the priest was not well but did not provide a specific cause of death.
Mm.
So he literally died.
Probably right of a heart attack.
They were going to arrest
they were
him.
Coming for him.
Right before they were going to arrest him.
He got off too easy.
So later in the article, Levine admits to what he did, and he said he left Danny beaten by the riverbank, but he was still alive, and he later returned to see him floating in the water face down. This story feels so close to me, and I hope I gave the respect that Danny and all these victims deserved.
Because Fuck those priests.
Fuck them.
Not literally. I hope they burn in hell.
I can just see why so many people have turned away from the church. I really can. And as much as good people like Scahill, like Sister Mary, were trying to bring these people back in, so many people were scarred by just the events or that they were abused themselves, and they just were turned off by it. And the God I believe in, I don't think he'll hold that against them. Mm-hmm. I really don't.
Well, and even your mom was saying last week that she didn't go back.
For years.
Is she active now?
No.
But, I mean, that would be enough for me to be like, peace out.
Yeah. I think it breaks my heart. With what my mom and my mom's family and my uncle went through, and then later on with my mom's faith went through, and then what I went through younger and having that sex offender around us kids, even though we were adults when we found out, and thank God nothing happened to us, it still leaves a mark and still makes you just say, fuck it, why can't I just talk to God myself in the privacy of my home?
Yeah.
I don't know, it just makes you wonder.
Yeah. I personally am not a fan of organized religion. I think I've mentioned that a time or two. But I think you can be spiritual and have a relationship with God without being religious.
Yeah.
And people can be religious without being spiritual. And it's like these little hoity-toity, I'm better than you, but I'm going to support a priest that likes to touch little boys. Nope.
There's a lot to unpack, but I was so humbled by Danny's story and these other victims that I hope that I respectfully brought to light just the horrific things that happened to these poor kids.
Yeah, and just bringing awareness to it to the extent. Because I remember after I moved to Massachusetts, a lot came out still in the 2000s, 2010s. And so it's still going on and it's still being hidden. Like, Danny wasn't the first, won't be the last.
Unfortunately.
Ugh, it just makes me sick.
That's why we bring up, like, you know, the no means no. And make sure you tell an adult you trust. And if you don't feel comfortable, be rude.
Yeah. And believe your children.
Believe your children. Right. And it's okay if you're rude and you're like, fuck you. Like, I don't want anything to do with you. Because they talked about, and I know my mom talked about it as well, but they talked about in the book how, you know, Danny would be picked up by this man at school and he was like, I don't want to go. Like, don't go. But it was like such a part of their routine in their lives. And just because they're in a position of power does not mean they're right.
Don't mean shit.
Nope.
Because people will take advantage.
So, R.I.P. Danny, and thank you for letting us tell your story.
Yeah, thanks, Hannah. That was a crazy, crazy story. Do you recommend the book?
I do recommend the book. I think it was heavy, so please don't go into it thinking like, oh, a light read before bed. But it was very, very well researched, very well spoken. I think he compiled the chapters beautifully. So, yes, I definitely would recommend it.
Good to know.
And it should be in our show notes.
Yes. And someday on our Instagram.
Yes. Thank you, Wanderers.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thanks for listening today. This show wouldn't be possible without our amazing producer and editor, Rob Fitzpatrick, who works tirelessly behind the scenes to bring you the best content.
And a special thanks to Taiga Sound Prod for providing the captivating intro music. Cinematic Intro 24.
And of course, we can't forget the hauntingly beautiful outro music, Rhino's Theme, composed by Kevin MacLeod.
If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platforms, like Spotify, Apple, and YouTube. Your feedback means the world to us.
Also, be sure to follow us on Instagram for behind-the-scenes glimpses, updates, and more thrilling content. You can find us at Wicked Wanderings Podcast.
Thank you so much for listening and being part of our Wicked Wanderings community. We appreciate each and every one of you.
Stay curious,
keep exploring,
and always remember to keep on wandering.
Get ready to rock your style with Wicked Wanderings.
Introducing our brand new merch.
Cozy up in our wicked hoodies.
Or flaunt your vibe in our sweet ass t-shirt.
Join the Wicked Wanderings crew, explore the mysterious,
and head to our merch store now.
The link is in the show notes below.